Back together again, you and I kicking off a brand new month on Tuesday, August 1st on Connecticut Today. We started with your friendly host here calling out a pair of state lawmakers for an editorial they co-authored about the No Labels movement. Quinnipiac University Management Professor Angela Matty joining us to chat about thousands of layoffs announced by pharmacy giant CVS Health, while Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio dropped by for her weekly update. You know, they just don't get it. Maybe they do get it, and they're trying just to, I don't know, maybe engage in some kicking, screaming, infantile, kindergarten-like, nursery school-like tantrum here. Maybe they think this is romper room. And if they scream and they yell enough, people will give them what they want. What am I talking about here? Well, I'm looking over the 20 or 30 different websites I look over every day in preparation for this program, and I see an opinion piece posted in a Hearst publication in San Francisco, the San Francisco Chronicle, I believe, and I'm looking at it. And I see the usual, you know, it's the same garbage every day, every week. Our opinion, and it's clearly labeled an opinion piece. I understand that. Our opinion, No Labels, is purporting to represent about 1.3% of American voters. Oh, and the subheadline is No Labels is No Good for America. I'm like, well, okay. Who is writing this? And I scroll down at the end. I didn't see it up at the top of the article to begin with. I said, okay, who's throwing a tantrum now? Because both of these major candidates, Donald Trump and Joe Biden, to a great many Americans, suck. They don't want them. And what do I see here that is now being carried across the country? Martin Looney is a Connecticut State Senate president, and Bob Duff is the State Senate Majority Leader. So Bob Duff, Democrat Norwalk, Martin Looney, Democrat New Haven, suddenly now, thank God, that for some reason, Bob Duff, Norwalk's own, and Martin Looney, who I've known for years, New Haven's own, they have to warn Americans about No Labels. How stupid do they think we are? And I'm going to spare you the most of this article, but, you know, they cite Aesop's fable about the wolf in sheep's clothing. And then they go with now the second index card here. You know, the first Democratic index card here. And the Republicans aren't really saying anything. They're like, yeah, whatever. It could help Trump. It might not, whoever. But, you know, the Democrats are doing their usual index card garbage here. Of, okay, wait, card number one. Hang on. Okay. A third party cannot win. Yeah, okay. Maybe they can win. But maybe the third party vote or a No Labels vote may be my way of, I don't know, protesting if I don't like the other two. You know, if I don't like the other two people that are running. Okay, all right, let's see. Okay, so we did the they can't win. Okay, it's not a real party. It's a PAC. It's interest groups, all right? Most Americans say, yeah, we don't care. We care about the name that would be there. Oh, okay, Wait, index card number three here. It will only get Donald Trump reelected. Yeah, okay. Well, if that's the problem, then maybe it's because a lot of people don't like Joe Biden. I mean, you see where I'm coming from on this, folks, right? It's the same tired, lame, tedious stuff. Oh, a third-party candidate can't win. Yeah, a lot of people realize that. Stop telling America that. Well, you know, this third party thing, this isn't what people want. Well, maybe not, but I will ask again, what is wrong with giving people a choice? Well, you know, this is a dark money group. And yeah, okay, people understand that there's a lot of strange money in politics. Who do you think you're talking to? You people who are warning about this over and over again, you're so freaking tedious here. People are smart enough. They understand it. They don't care whether it's a PAC or a party. They don't care. Do you understand me? They're looking at a name. Over 50% of the country doesn't want Donald Trump. Over 50% of the country doesn't want Joe Biden. They are pining. They are dying for a third choice. They might not want the third choice. But of course, Bob Duff here from Norwalk and Martin Looney from New Haven. Oh, you can hear the breast beating and the sobbing in their editorial. This assumption could not be more wrong, and no label's actions today could not be more telling about what the true intentions are. Expanding the income and opportunity gaps in America by catering to conservative corporate Republicans. And the machinations of a few fringe Democrats. Oh, there's fringe Democrats. So that's Bob Duff and Martin Looney telling the far left of their party. And if they're left of Duff and Looney, that's like so far in left field, it's out in the parking lot. Telling them to go away. And in 2024, that's a... Oh, by the way, Mr. Sound Effects Guy, can we have the horror movie sound effects there? Because we need that on this line. All right, we all ready? I think we're ready. And in 2024, that's a recipe for disaster in America. Oh, that's just horrible. And then they go into the math here. Let's start with a no-labels premise that a third option is the answer. About 40% of American voters are unaffiliated, seeming to indicate some dissatisfaction with our country's long-standing two-party system. But as research has found, almost 90% of unaffiliated American voters actually identify or lean regularly or vote either Democratic or Republicans. Yes, yeah, so we get that. You don't stop being so damn pedantic. Look it up. My God, the people here, and let's face it, it's mostly Democrats because they are worried, and I get the worry. Their candidate right now, with all due respect, every day comes over more and more, and I know he's the president, but he does come over more and more to a lot of people who may not want to mention it as a doddering old man. Even a lot of Democrats are saying, can we have someone else than Joe Biden? A lot of Republicans are saying, can we have someone else than Donald Trump? All very valid excuses. But man, these pedantic, these accusatory editorials, oh, how dare you want to look at No Labels. Now, No Labels has said, and we've had Mr. Lieberman on here, and another person I have had, and Melissa's had some people on in the morning, and I'm sure that Lisa has or may in the election cycle coming up. Now, they have said that they are not fixed on running somebody. They may or they may not. But you see what's driving both parties crazy, more Democrats than Republicans, is that they're playing their cards close to the vest, which is a beautiful thing. Don't say who you're going to run. In fact, can you imagine if the No Labels people held off until the last possible minute, and then all of a sudden they unveil who their candidate or candidates might be? Remember, the longer they hold off, the longer the No Labels people hold off, right? The longer they hold off is the less time that other people have to do opposition research, to record radio and TV spots. So this is why there are all these people in D.C. and a lot of Democrats sobbing like a third-party choice would be the end of the world. I have an idea. If Democrats are so upset with no labels and they lob all these charges at them, guess what? Run a better candidate. If Joe Biden is polling so poorly, run somebody else. Run somebody else. Don't allow Joe Biden to run and hide from RFK Jr. or from what's her name there, the self-help author there. Her name escapes me at the moment. But come on, man. Stop telling the American people, and this goes for Republicans too, but most of the whining and the crying and the sobbing and the tantrums and banging their fists and feet on the ground like a spoiled three-year-old, most of this is coming from the Democratic side. Stop telling people, well, you don't quite understand. No, Senator Looney, no, Senator Duff, with all due respect, people get it. They don't have to go into where the money is coming from. They don't have to go into where what the polling numbers say. They get it. They either viscerally like or don't like the choice that I still say is probably not going to happen. But according to all the new polls we see, including the one that came out this week, that probably will happen. Stop being afraid of a third choice. And stop yelling at people and treating people like children and telling them, well, you don't understand. No. People do understand. That's the point that's driving you nuts and scaring the daylights out of you, isn't it? Hey, a pretty significant move announced earlier today by a national chain that we all see or hear of or maybe use for some of our healthcare items. CVS going to cut 5,000 jobs out of their 300,000 or so to go into a different kind of a healthcare push here. And to talk about that, a return visit from a professor of management at Quinnipiac University, Angela Matty, to talk about what this may mean and, you know, what these local pharmacies may be morphing into. Professor Matty, hi, it's Paul here again. Good to have you back. How are you?
It's my pleasure to be back, Paul, and I'm just fine and happy to discuss this interesting issue with you.
Yeah, 5,000 jobs. Now, in a company of 300,000 people, I mean, that's not insignificant, although they still have a boatload of people working for them. So from afar, Professor, what do you see going on here?
Well, it does represent 2% of the workforce, but I think the bigger issue, it represents a realignment of CVS's strategic priorities. And I just, you know, a caveat, I'm not privy to their strategy discussions. Mm-hmm. I just have watched this industry for over 20 years. And I think the chief executive officer's internal memo that the Wall Street Journal got a hold of is pretty telling. You know, she indicates that CVS wants to be in the forefront of one in a generation transformation in healthcare. So, you know, essentially CVS is going to get into the care delivery business in a much larger role than they have played. You know, right now you can go into a CVS and get a COVID shot, mm-hmm. or flu shot. They're purchasing primary care practices, which is really a transformation in the healthcare system.
Now, what did you see, Professor, in that memo? Because, I mean, I have it, but a lot of people don't have the Wall Street Journal. A lot of that stuff is behind a payroll. Anything you saw of real interest here that kind of raised your eyebrows on that or not?
Yeah, I think it's telling that, number one, what they have done is the 5,000 jobs that they have eliminated seem to be in the corporate sector. And I would assume, and again, these are assumptions, mm-hmm. that most of these people have retail backgrounds. So they are retail experts in marketing and strategy around the retail industry. The medical delivery system is a much different animal, and it requires a different skill set and a different knowledge set. And it would seem that, you know, looking through the window, that CVS is positioning itself to become a major player in providing healthcare services beyond just getting a COVID shot. And, you know, primary care physicians, of which there's a shortage, are the gatekeepers of the healthcare system. So they are the ones that determine, you know, does this patient need a specialist? Does this patient need a hospitalization? So along with what seems to be this major paradigm shift on CVS's part, and by the way, they're not alone. You know, Amazon is jumping in the bandwagon, and Walgreens is jumping in the bandwagon, because you're talking about a pie that is about 20% of the gross domestic product is spent on healthcare.
That's wild.
So it's a lucrative area. But it really is a, you know, it's a shift. The hospitals and the practices, the provider practices owned by the hospitals have been the hub of the healthcare delivery system. And you have not had organizations such as CVS or Amazon playing in this field in any big way. But it appears that there is this major shift coming. And along with the shift is, you know, we have a disincentive to save money in this healthcare system.
Well, so, you know, I talk about all that all the time. Why does everything cost so darn much, right?
Yeah, well, for two reasons.
Yeah.
Number one, you go to the provider and it's fee for service. So the more stuff that gets done, the more dollars are spent. And number two, you're not going in and buying something and questioning how much it's costing, because most likely your employer is paying through some type of insurance vehicle.
Bingo.
So those two reasons. So now what CVS and the Amazons are exploring is value-based care. So in other words, they form some way of paying for a population, and there's an incentive to keep the cost down for caring for that population.
Yeah, some of you folks in Greenwich and all over Connecticut, all over the U.S., you may in the years to come be seeing a general practitioner, a non-specialist, just doctor for maybe a checkup or some health services at a pharmacy chain. CVS early today saying that they're laying off 5,000 management level people in the retail end of it. Maybe this is an angle toward being more of a one-stop healthcare situation. And joining us right now is, once again, for a few more minutes, Professor Angela Matty of Quinnipiac University. Professor, on this, and, you know, CVS has made this announcement, and you mentioned also the other big companies, Rite Aid, Walgreens. Do you think, Professor, they rebrand in any way? Because a lot of people, you know how the American consumer is, wait a minute, I got to go see my doctor at a pharmacy? That doesn't sound right, even though it may be fine. I think you know what I'm talking about here. You think this is going to require a big kind of, you know, rebranding here? Do they try and delineate the store from the medical practice? How do you think this works?
Well, what they're doing is, it's not too dissimilar to, or at least initially. I mean, that's the caveat. I'm not sure how in the long term this will play out, or there's change their branding and marketing. But they're buying practices, like hospitals have bought practices. So, you know, patients that have gone to that practice probably won't stop to say, oh, now CVS owns this practice. So that's one way to approach it. And the other way is, I'm sure they have really smart marketing and branding people helping them, you know, cross the moat, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, the financial, look, it's a business. and healthcare is a business, and the financial incentives are there. You know, when you talk about this is trillions of dollars that go into healthcare every year, that it's not surprising that Amazon wants to get into the business and CVS wants to get into the business in a much broader way than they have. CVS, with their relationship with Aetna, has some historical knowledge, you know, on the insurance side.
And I'm glad you brought I'm glad you brought that up because, Professor, we had a caller on the break ask my producer to ask you, how do you think this rolls into, you know, the Aetna-CVS kind of arrangement, which is, what do I see here online? It's a $70 billion company. I mean, how do you think that affects CVS and Aetna together?
Well, I think CVS has a leg up because they have Aetna and Aetna's deep knowledge of the insurance industry and healthcare. You know, it's not, as President Trump likes to say, it's a very complicated area. So they certainly have, you know, a leg up with the expertise in Aetna and the historical knowledge of Aetna. So, you know, and I'm sure that to some extent, and again, this is just surmising and watching the industry for over 20 years, influence the discussions, you know, the high-level C-suite discussions about strategy and direction for this company. You know, when you look at the demographics, you know, the patients aren't going away. We're getting older. Mm. The baby boomers are, there are a lot of us, and there's a lot of us aging and, you know, with longer lives. There's money to be had in this particular area, as witnessed by, you know, almost 20% of our gross domestic product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a dissatisfaction, general dissatisfaction about the value of our healthcare in this system. You know, we spend a lot of money and our outcomes are not good. So, you know, there's all those things that business people look at in terms of, you know, is the return on investment? Is this a smart strategy? Are there in this space? And, you know, CVS is jumping in and Amazon is jumping in. And I think in 2 years and 5 years, we'll have a very different model for delivery. It'll no longer be, you know, for the most part, the hospitals will be competing with CVS and with Amazon and whoever else decides to jump in.
Wow. Great stuff. Professor Angela Matty, Professor of Management, Quinnipiac University. Professor, it's always good to speak with you, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. My pleasure, and have a good afternoon.
You too, Professor. Thank you. Professor Angela Matty, MPH, Professor of Management. How about that? So your doctor's office may stay where it is, as she said. But your practice where your doctor is or your new doctor may be owned by CVS. And remember, Rite Aid's out there, Walgreens is out there. Everybody wants, as they said on Good Times, right? We're moving on up. We finally got our piece of the pie. Every Tuesday at this time, our Tuesday 5 o'clock spotlight is taken up by Yankee Institute of Connecticut reporter and blogger Megan Portfolio with the Hartford Portfolio. And Megan's with us now this afternoon. Hey there, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing well. And you're writing, I wanted to see, this is a great piece. You're writing about something, Megan, that, you know, thankfully, at least for the time being, was kind of shot down by the General Assembly. I remember screaming as loud as I could about this. And I think myself and the other talk hosts around the state, we were able to at least do our part in putting the kibosh, at least for now, Megan. You know, some of these things never die, about handing an unelected bureaucrat more authority in the state. What's going on?
Oh, well, shocking. Okay. Government wants to have more power. Mm-hmm. So the commissioner for the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, or DEEP for short, last legislative session put in a bill, 1145, had a bunch of environment stuff in there. But like the gross part was it wanted to give her all of this regulatory authority. So basically, she would have been able to get us into compacts with other states like TCI. Like that, remember that disgusting gas tax they tried to put on us a few years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, fortunately, the bill didn't go anywhere. It didn't get called for a vote. But there was a press conference last week in New Haven. They were talking about some new regulations they want to put on cars and trucks because we have to follow California's greenhouse gas regulations. And the commissioner said three different times that, you know, she needs to have more regulatory authority. Which translation means we're going to see that again next session.
It bothers me like crazy, Megan, because, you know, I had legislators on both sides of the aisle, Megan, tell me this is not good. I mean, we need to have legislators state what they think on this stuff, even if the votes are uncomfortable and even if they want to pull some sort of Pontius Pilate going on here.
I mean, yeah, let them vote on it and then let the voters decide if we like their decisions or not. But you have these bureaucrats making decisions for us. They're not held accountable. They can't just come in and invent things and make them up and then not be held accountable for it. Mm-hmm. And she's going on saying, well, other states do it. Well, you know what other states do? They don't have income taxes and car taxes. Why can't we follow other states in that? Sorry, I get really upset with this stuff. I mean, we elect these lawmakers to come in and make the laws, and that's fine. Sometimes it goes my way, sometimes it doesn't go my way, but at least I can go and vote them out. I can't vote out a commissioner of these different agencies.
Yeah, and look, and Megan Portfolio is the guest from the Yankee Institute. We know, Megan, that the reason they're doing this, at least this is my conjecture, I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but, you know, I think people know that the reason they take this angle on it is because the majority Democrats in Hartford don't want to be the super majority to push all this through because they don't want a straight Democrat yes and a straight Republican no. So instead of having the guts to do that, they say, well, you know, because they know it would cost them probably a little bit at the ballot box.
I mean, I don't want to speak for our lawmakers, but I mean, the number one job for a lawmaker once they get elected is to work on getting reelected. So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, let someone else do the dirty work. But that's not the way our state's supposed to be run.
So do you think, Megan Portfolio, that we're going to see this again maybe as soon as the calendar flips to 2024 and we go into the so-called short session, even though the legislature tends to stay away from the greasy, controversial stuff in the short years or not?
I mean, I left my crystal ball at home, but I wouldn't be surprised. The Department of Transportation has got this goal where they want all of us driving 5% less than we drove in 2019, and they want this done by 2030, but it's a goal with no teeth in it. So there's no way to regulate it or force us to do it. But giving Deep all this power, she could actually come in and be like, gee, Paul, you drove 5% more. I'm going to give you a citation. I mean, I don't want to give her any bad ideas, but I mean, if she has all this power, she could do that.
And I remember, Megan, when this was being bandied about in Hartford, and I was actually reading part of the bill, and yes, my eyes were glazing over, and there was a part of the bill that would have allowed, you know, the Deep Commissioner, Katie Dykes, or anybody else who would be in that position in years to come, to introduce, I guess the bill said something like market-based alternatives. Basically, it was a fancy legislative phrase for taxes and fees.
Okay, Paul, you're as nerdy as I am. It's market-based compliance.
That's
mechanism.
That's it. Market-based compliance mechanism. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? Yes. I remember reading that and saying, boy, can we come up with a more funky way of saying taxes? Oh, my God. So I'm not.
I had to Google it.
Okay, no, that's fine. No, yeah, that's fine. So you noticed that too. So I don't feel so bad.
Yeah, they just keep changing. They keep changing the language and just keep changing the definition of things to try to trick us. But we at Yankee Institute, we got our eyes open and we read every single bill. So they can try it again, but we're going to catch it and we're going to do whatever we can to not allow this to go through.
Do you really? You folks up there, you and Mark Fitch and all the fine folks up there, and you read every bill?
True story. We read them, and then we text each other at night, and we laugh about them, and get outraged, and... Sometimes say, hey, that's a good one.
Yeah. No, but I mean, the budget bill is like 1,000 pages. So what do you do? Like, do you take certain sections? Because this is intriguing that you actually read the bills, which is refreshing. Oh, my God.
We just got to read fast. And I'd like to see them give us a little more time because it's really stressful. I don't get a lot of sleep at the end of session. And just for my sanity, I wish they would just give the public more time. Just so, give me an extra day to read these things.
Oh, my God, Megan, it drives me up a wall. And what other business, if it was a consultancy or a law firm or an engineering firm, I always say this on the air here, what other business would do business this way? Hey, we need this major presentation. Let's finish it at 3 in the morning while everybody's bleary-eyed. Who does that? Who does that?
I came from no one. I came from the corporate world. I worked for some of the biggest companies in the world, and it was never that way.
No, of course not. You weren't up at 4 in the morning with cold pizza and Diet Coke saying, "Oh yeah, we got it now. We're all good to go." All right, folks.
I mean, maybe in my college days, but not in the real world.
Yes, those all-nighters. Megan Portfolio, the Hartford Portfolio. Check it out at yankeeinstitute.org. Megan, thank you. Have a happy week, and we'll check in next week.
Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
Appreciate it. All right. Megan Portfolio. There you go. So this, remember, folks, we talked about this bill 1145. It ain't that nothing ever dies in this state. Nothing ever dies. It's like a bad horror movie. Hey, you know, taxation bill 5.